Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, November 3rd.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mm. Are you, like, not energized?
I'm great.
I saw you eating.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're just trying to be a little sultry and...
Is sultry the right word?
I don't know.
Sensuous sounding?
Nothing like that.
Definitely not.
You were not going in that direction.
Not at all. Good morning. I'm energized. As soon as I leave here, I'm going to be going home to Vegas, so...
My best friend is
engaged. Well, all of my friends are. My mom has married two of my best friends.
Really?
She performed both their weddings, and I'm pretty sure she'll perform this one too.
Yeah.
So he got engaged, and so they're having the engagement party this weekend. I'm going home, but he's my best friend, but he's a guy, so right. I'm expecting him to put me in the groom party, but I'm not going to wear one of those suits. But I'm expecting to be standing up there, so. I'm excited for that. I'll be there, and then I may be coming Sunday or Monday, so we'll have to figure that out after.
Okay.
I meant to tell you earlier in the week, but I was, you know, whatever. But probably Sunday, so that's where I'll be this weekend.
Okay, cool. You know that we have to move the clocks to Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means longer nights, which I hate. You know, the night starts at 4:35.
Oh, yeah, it gets darker earlier. Yeah.
Right. So then, you know, you think it's like constantly 10 o'clock at night or something.
I think they should get rid of daylight savings.
I
thought it was for the farmers or whatever the reason was. It's kind of archaic. We don't really need it anymore.
But why? Don't you like the extra daytime daylight in
the
summer?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, why do we have to get darker earlier?
You mean we should have to go back?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, those are the time zones. What are you going to do?
Do we really need them? Daylight savings.
Awesome. So you're going to Vegas. That'll be cool. Mm-hmm. Next week, I'll probably be going out of town, so that'll be nice, too. Always nice to get away. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by a couple of awesome guests. We're going to talk about their movie and everything.
Yep.
So that will be cool. Yesterday, we had a very cool guest.
He was so cool. Dr. Chris.
Right.
You're my hero.
Metzler. Right.
Yeah.
And he was a Cambridge scholar. He was
brilliant, but also he's a conservative political analyst who I'm obsessed with. I think he's amazing. I just think we need more people like him.
Because he's
open
minded and he's smart.
Well,
he's
open minded, but he's a good person, and that's what we need is more good people.
And I think he also shows the great opportunity that this country affords to people, you know?
Yeah.
He was born in Guyana. Mm-hmm. He came here, and look how far he's gone. He went to Cambridge in London, you know?
Right. And the other big thing, I mean, he wore many hats. He also runs and owns many recovery centers in South Florida that focuses on opioid addiction, which is really cool. And I love the fact that he also is a supporter of medical marijuana.
Right.
That meant a lot to me. So.
Yeah.
And had no problem talking shit about the pharmaceutical companies that give doctors kickbacks for overprescribing opioid
prescriptions.
Right.
Well, you got to call it as it is. You know, I mean, people that don't want to face the truth, they have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the news, I guess Bergdahl won't face prison time. You know, that's a soldier that deserted back in Afghanistan.
I never listened to that podcast.
What podcast?
Serial season 2 is all about this.
Oh, really?
I started listening to season 1 and... Maybe on my ride home today, I'll listen to season 2 because that's all that gets me through the rides is podcasts for 4 hours.
That's interesting. So he actually deserted. He caused the death of at least one soldier or two. Mm-hmm. And by being captured, and they had to go out and get him and find him and everything. So he was on trial. It's still pretty pathetic what he did, you know, but
I don't even know what he did. I'm not familiar with it.
The price, you know, being
captured.
Captured for 3-4 years or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that sucked, man. But at any rate, so.
Also, we had 11 minutes of paradise yesterday when a Twitter employee who got let go shut down Donald Trump's account.
Really?
They deleted his account for 11 minutes.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I see that in the headline here.
That's
I didn't know
so
what
cool.
was going on. That's very interesting, you know?
Everyone loves this employee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about this thing that's already breaking about the DNC and everything?
Yeah,
did you see that?
That's fucked up too.
It really is, right? I mean, so the 2016 elections turn out to be a joke.
Well,
here's the
bad
thing. Joke.
It makes sense to me in a sense of, remember we were talking about Russia. What's coming out now is Russia has been using social media and this is separate from that. But mm-hmm. what I'm saying is Russia has been using social media to create divisiveness between already groups that don't get along by inserting propaganda and news stories
right.
that aren't true, right? So I think also on top of that, and plus the corruption going on within the DNC, and the DNC also got hacked as well.
Right.
I mean, it's just a disaster for
and
our
stuff
political for our political. Yeah. Environment. I mean, everything. We they are. You know, they owe the Democrats an apology. You
yeah.
know, they owe all of us an apology. But I also don't like the current chair of the DNC. Anyways, that Tony Perez guy. It should have gone to the other guy who I liked way better, or whatever his name is. And
yeah,
I mean, we're just in a clusterfuck of.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that turns out to be. You know, I mean, it could be a huge scandal as well. And if you notice, we just get distracted by an elections that happened a year ago. And nobody has time to govern, you know. It's everybody's accusing everybody. Everybody investigating.
But also
everybody.
There's also
suspicious.
There's also like the guy he nominated for to run like the Federal Reserve. Who's the guy that the guy that he just nominated to take over Janet Yellen or whatever
right,
her name is
right.
doesn't even have
Reserve.
A degree in economics.
Right. Wow.
He's not even filling necessary positions. And the people yeah. he's filling in don't have the degrees qualifying them to be in the position. And I read this morning that Betsy DeVos might resign soon because she's a horrible shit show of a person in that position as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I don't know. Anyway, enough for politics today. We're going to bring in our guests right now. We're going to be joined by a couple of filmmakers that are visiting this morning, but they're both in L.A., so you're not really visiting town. Guys, get close to the mic. We're joined by Jeannie O'Donoghue and Joey Horvitz. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks.
Of course. Joey, you're going to have to get close.
Okay.
You'll thank me later.
That's Jeannie Donoghue, by the way.
Donoghue?
Yeah.
Thank you. That's right. It is Donoghue. Thank you for correcting me. You didn't, but he did. Donoghue it is. And we won't make another mistake, but sometimes I guess you really have to read closely, right? And what are you going to do? Welcome to the show, guys. So you both live in L.A., right?
Yep.
Jeannie, how
yep.
long have you been here?
6 years.
6 years? And where did you grow up?
I grew up near Boston, but I lived in New York City for a long time and moved out to L.A. after film school.
Oh, cool. So you went at a young age, you moved to New York? Or
yeah, right out of college.
Oh, right out of college. Mm-hmm. And where did you go to school?
I went to Dartmouth College in New Hampshire for undergrad and then Columbia for film school.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you knew you wanted to do film all along?
No, it was you know, I guess in my 20s I decided to go back to grad school for filmmaking.
Oh, what were you planning on doing before that?
Well, I was a teacher. I taught middle school in the Bronx for a bunch of years and worked in public education in New York City after college mm-hmm. through this program called Teach for America.
Oh, was that a challenge?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I had a lot of my sorority sisters did Teach for America.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
It's cool.
Different cities.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah.
They got placed in, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, very nice. And Joey, how long have you been here in L.A.?
I have been here for my whole life.
You were born here.
I'm an L.A. native.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
You see, that's why I always ask where people are from, because not many people are from L.A., it turns out, you know. But there's a native Angeleno.
It's true, you know. There's babies born in these hospitals here in Los Angeles every day.
Right. So you mean we don't have 4 million people for nothing, right?
Exactly.
And so did you go to school too?
Yeah. I went to Cal State Northridge studying radio, TV, and film. But right outside of that, I instead of going to more film school, we started our own production company at the age of 24.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I went to see some too, you know?
Oh, so nice.
I'm an alumni too. I went for business though, so that was a different thing. But I remember that program they had.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get into it because everybody's fascinated. TV, film, you know, let me get into that. That's probably easy. But then you start thinking, well, you know, maybe it's hard to get a job in that field and stuff. So I went into business, but you guys are showing that, you know, I can actually take this in school and make a career out of this, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to pave your own path, I think. But
right, yeah, it's hard, and that's what we're realizing now is that a lot of people, rather than waiting for opportunities to come to them, they make their own opportunities, and you did it at a young age, too, right?
Yeah, I think it's different what I did at a young age than what people can do today. I mean, today technology is available to anybody with a, you know, you can go and get your own camera, shoot HD, you can edit your own, you can distribute your own.
Right,
you know? I mean,
right.
You can do everything your own if you wanted to. I mean, the opportunities are out there.
Right, right. And that's what I mean, you know, so I'm seeing a lot more people really paving their own road, their own path where they want to go,
mm-hmm.
You know, so that's very cool. So and then at what point did you, so you lived in New York for a while, what did you do there? Did you start making films and stuff there?
Yeah, well, I taught for, you know, 4 years and then worked in like school reform and,
right.
And throughout the five boroughs, and then I went to film school for, you know, 5 years at Columbia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I started making films there.
Yeah. So what happened to the education part? Did you get tired of that or what happened?
Well, I mean, it's such an intense job, and I think I went into it thinking it would be 2 years. That's what the time commitment is. And then I stayed for four and kept working in like policy for a few. So I actually ended up spending more time than I thought I would in that. But I had studied art in college and have always gravitated toward creative work. So I did want to return at some point to making stuff. So
yeah.
It was kind of a natural return.
Very cool. So, and then you decided, that's it, I'm moving to LA?
Yeah.
Because this is, although there's action in New York, right, as far as film and things like
yeah.
Right? But LA is where it's at, right?
It does feel that way.
Yeah,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
everybody comes here. Because this is like the Mecca. This is where everything is. You need crew. You need talent. You need everything you need.
I just feel like it's right probably here. Easier to shoot. I mean, you have so many challenges when you're shooting in New York as far as like just getting around transportation, weather, you know, scheduling, and it's just, I feel like it's just probably a little bit easier to do it here. Or there's less, it's not yeah. easier, but there's less challenges into things you can control. You
yeah,
know?
Probably. I think so. Do you guys find that it's easier to do it here?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you look at LA and you can, 2 hours away, you're in desert, you got ocean, you got every environment that you could pretty much ever think of to shoot within
right.
the area, and you have a very film-friendly environment
mm-hmm. yeah.
with a ton of crew and a ton of
that's
ton
what
of
I'm
actors.
Saying. Everybody, yeah, a lot of talent, a lot of this.
Yeah.
Everything you want is right here. You don't have to go very far. So, at what point did you guys meet? It had to be within the last 6 years, or did you know each other before you moved?
Oh, it was just like a year and a half ago. We met for this project.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, but how do you meet for it? I mean, do you like start putting it out there that you have a project and you find somebody, or did you know each other before and then you collaborated? How did it work?
Actually, I was able to make the film through a competition, so I submitted it to this contest, really, and it's through Lexus Short Films, and
uh-huh.
it, you know, got advanced to different rounds, and I met Joey in that process, and then it was selected to get made.
Oh, and what film was that one that you made?
It was a short film called Lambing Season, and
uh-huh.
it was it's about as different from the movie as we're going to talk about today as you can get. It's a family drama set in Ireland, so I submitted that to this contest, and then made a, you know, treatment, a short pitch to be able to make this basketball movie.
Wow. Was that your first film?
No, I had made a few others in film school.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Very cool. So, but I mean, did you have anything like out of school that you felt I'm in the right place, you know. I mean, because it's like, I mean, to me, it's a challenge to make a film, you know. And the first one I'm always fascinated with, because how do you go about it? You know, I mean, do you start making connections early on?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the people I still talk to about, you know, different drafts of a script or edit notes are my classmates from film school. So that community of artists has really, like, kind of grown up together. And
I see.
And
so you all do different projects and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. And how did it work here? I mean, did they have a good program here at CSUN for film?
Yeah, I mean, it was, but then, to be honest, it has nothing to do with
what
I'm doing. I just,
right.
You know, I just did it.
Yeah.
You know, I just went ahead and did it. I wasn't brought into the, I don't have any family that was in the industry, so it wasn't like generations,
right.
But my business partner at the time was like three generations of managers and actors and everything, and so he asked me to join the company with him, and then I just really taught myself on every film that we produced. I put myself in as the second AD. I put myself in as the post-production supervisor's assistant.
Right.
You know, we made films. We went out and developed the movies. We found investors. We produced the films. We did our own post-production and then went to all the film markets around the world and licensed the movies out. So I essentially mm-hmm. got, like, you know, film school A to Z from development all the way
just
to
doing it.
By actively doing it.
By
yeah.
just
yeah.
doing it. And,
very
you know,
cool.
that's just... it's the best way to do it. You can learn theory as much as you want. Mm-hmm. And of course, I did my own reading and did my own discovery. But
you have to do it hands-on, right?
Yeah, it's a hands-on thing.
Yeah, yeah. So how did the project come about, Jeannie? How did this... this is something that you came up with?
Yeah, I wrote a script for it. And it's a sports film with a twist. So it's a... story about a young new kid in town who comes to the new high school and shows up for the boys' basketball tryouts. And then we follow that kid and try to see, like, is it going to be successful or not? And the kid's kind of skinny and small, a little smaller than the rest of the boys. And then we realize that the tryout kid has this secret that I think we'll have to reveal on the show.
Oh, no. Don't reveal it.
No?
If there's a twist, I don't want to.
Okay.
What do you think? Should we reveal it? Okay, if you guys want to.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So, but let's get to that in a little bit, okay? Let's keep people...
Save room for a moment.
Yeah, exactly. But what I do want to know is... So, I mean, but now I can see why you would come up with an idea like this, because you've had background with kids in schools and everything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So is that how it came about for you? I mean, out of all the topics in the world.
Yeah,
right?
I think my teaching experience was a huge inspiration for writing a story set with, like, teenagers. I mean, I just really like that age of kids who are kind of on the brink of becoming adults and navigating, like, social norms and systems and rules. And
that's true. Was that, like, a profound time in your life?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's when we really evolved, right, into a person.
Yeah.
And during those times. And this is high school, right?
Yeah.
That they're in. Now, so I wanted to ask about... What attracted you to sports? I mean, this is basketball, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Did you have any relationship with basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I played basketball growing up, but I played some other sports a little more intensely and for longer. But I love basketball. I'm a big basketball fan. I watch a lot of it, and I like that it's a small team. You know, 5 people, 10 people on the court. It's a very, you know, compressed kind of space,
right.
Indoors.
It's not like a huge football game or something.
Yeah. So I had a lot of experience playing different sports, but I gravitated toward basketball for, like, an intensity that I think it has, especially cinematically.
Right. So I guess it happens that you tend to write about things you know, right? That you know, and unless you want to do a lot of friggin' research, mm-hmm. it would take you forever, but at least start with what you know, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So this is interesting. So you came up with a script, and what was the next step for you?
Well, we didn't have a ton of time between writing the script and shooting, so we jumped right into casting and, you know, had a
great. Who's we? Did you have someone?
Joey.
So you had met Joey by then.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you guys met at what? At the script stage?
At the treatment stage.
At the treatment
stage. And then we developed the script. She wrote the script and we developed it all together.
Oh, I see. Okay, so it was really from the beginning that both of you were working on this. How did you, could you connect with this? I mean, you have probably a different background, right? Rather than basketball and
I have a basketball background.
No,
first thing you told me. Yeah.
No, I mean, listen, I played basketball when I was a kid. I mean, listen, I didn't play varsity or junior varsity, but I played on the C's team, which is basically because I wasn't tall and big. But I played ball a lot and volleyball and soccer as well.
So this appealed to you, the basketball.
Yeah, but the story, you know, the story of a character, you know, it's the true story of a hero's journey, and you connect with that, you know, you connect with the underdog, and you want to see the underdog win.
That's true.
It's a classic story.
And where's the setting for the story? Where does it take place?
Here in L.A.
In L.A.
Yeah, we shot in a high school in Watts and then an outdoor court in San Pedro.
Oh, I see. So you went on location. I mean, Watts is really like considered what, inner city?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a private all-boys high school that we filmed in. Really beautiful gym and facility.
Oh, very nice. So this is fascinating. So the film is called Game.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And it probably has more than one meaning.
Yeah,
right. Okay. So this is cool because I'm thinking now you guys are collaborating, you're doing this together. How did you go about, I mean, I guess probably like financing is one of the first things that comes to mind, right, when you put together a film. Have you had any experience with that at all, getting some funds together?
Well, you listen. This is a very interesting program, and Genie was selected from a pool of over 4,700 filmmakers.
Wow!
So that's something to be. I think it's something important to mention. She was one of four filmmakers. So yeah.
Where was the selection done, or was it a competition or something?
Yeah, it's a competition called Lexus Short Films, and so Lexus was behind the financing of these. And so we had a decent budget. And,
Very nice.
You know, there was no need to put a car in the film, even though there is one, but you would never know it's a Lexus. It's just it's a nice way for you know, films to be done and filmmakers to build their careers.
No, you got to do what you
got to
do. It's business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, after all, that's what it is. So now you have to tell a story in, 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Is that hard to do?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the first thing you have to decide on is how big of a story do you want to tell in a scope like that.
Right.
You know, I've heard over the years, like, the shortest story, the shortest duration and time frame that you could possibly fit into that is usually, you know, the most beneficial, because you don't want to try to tell, like, 10 years of someone's life within 15 minutes, but, you know, a 3-day tryout at this basketball.
Yeah, that's true. How do you determine the length of the film?
Well, it had to be a short film, so there are different distinctions of what constitutes a short versus a feature.
Okay.
But I also, you know, I've had some experience on the festival circuit with previous short films, and I think in a lot of ways the shorter the better. So I was always aiming for 15 minutes or less.
Ah, very nice. So have you watched short films and stuff? I mean,
yeah,
I never get a chance.
My ex was a filmmaker, so he was one of the first short films I ever saw were his, because he was a part of all the Hollywood Shorts. Holly Shorts does an amazing film festival. I got to travel around to a ton of film festivals around the country with him and see a bunch of short films.
Yeah.
And his was, I think, the one that he did. It's not his first film, but was 24 minutes or something. It was, yeah. And then it's crazy because it goes all the way down to like a minute. You know, like you can have a minute film.
Really?
So yeah, I really like short films.
That's really lazy, though, right?
No, it's not lazy. Because actually, it's really challenging, because if you think about it, well, I think the one I saw that was a minute was an animated film, which I think, which is a whole other ball game and difficult level within itself. But if you can successfully tell a moving story in a minute, that's crazy.
But can you?
Yes. It's very challenging.
Really? Look at commercials. Commercials, 30 seconds,
exactly.
60 seconds.
People, sometimes have people in tears.
You know? But the reality is, if you can't, it's like boot camp for filmmaking. Because if you can tell a story, you know, a successful story in, let's say, under 15 minutes, then, you know, try telling a story with it when you have more than like an hour and a half in time. So it's like, it's really, it's hard to really tell a three-act story, you know, unless you have like, like a gimmick or like a crazy twist. And the reason I say crazy twist in this film, which we haven't talked about the twist yet, but the twist isn't just revealed at the end, like a lot of films do. Genie made a conscious choice of revealing the twist almost one third of the way into the film, as opposed to the end, which is a much which is I would think a very strong choice, you know, when you're a filmmaker. And you know, like, but if you're just depending on a twist at the end, then yeah, you can tell a short film in 3 minutes. But I think it's I feel that those are a little, I don't know, a little cheap in a way, just because you're relying fully on a twist to tell your story.
Right. So early on, did you guys consciously like divide the duties of and everything, like who's going to do what on the film?
Well, they're kind of predefined. She's the writer director, and I'm the producer.
Right.
So she stays fairly creative, and then I just solve all the problems and make sure she can do what she does best.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like film sets are, is just like a combination of just like different kinds of problem solvers, like just always tackling different problems in different ways, you know, like ways you never thought, and problems you probably never thought either. So
Joey's a creative producer, though, and a creative guy, and contributed a lot to the process of telling the story the best way it could be told, you know, at the notes phase and in the edit. And he had an idea for the end of the credits of the movie that we kind of took it and ran with it. But it was his idea to begin with, to use documentary footage of women throughout the history of basketball playing.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
I think I know what the twist is now. Give it away.
Oops.
All right. Well, So I'm looking. I did take a look at the preview of the movie, the trailer. And if you guys want to check it out, I guess they can go. Is it available for everyone on Vimeo or on YouTube or anything like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so let me ask you this. We're teasing people about the film. Where are they going to be able to see it?
Yeah, so we're playing in a bunch of film festivals coming up. The closest one, and it's this weekend, is in Ojai on Sunday and Tuesday. But then it's in Hawaii and Savannah and Texas and Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow.
A bunch of
so
places.
Are you going like through festivals and stuff like that now? And then eventually will it be available to the wide... I mean, because people would probably want to see it all over the world, right? I mean, don't you want the exposure?
You know, the reality
is... You don't have
is,
to give away plans, no, no, no. I'm just saying.
Jeannie has a link that she could share, but the reality is also, it's something that we haven't discussed yet, is we're going for an Academy campaign on this film.
Ah.
And part of that process is kind of keeping it dark for a little bit.
Yeah.
But...
that's good.
She's more than happy to give her to give a link to the film that everybody can watch as well.
Okay, that's fine. Now the thing, you know, what's interesting? You said you're gonna go for a nomination for the Academy Award.
We're going for it.
Yeah, because I think you'll win it because your publicist, almost every filmmaker that was here, was either a contender or a winner. I'm telling you, she's good. Yeah,
she's amazing.
Catherine. Yeah,
thanks,
right,
Catherine.
Yeah,
Catherine Lynn Scott.
Yeah, you're in good company. So if her past work is any indication, you'll do very well. Because she probably picks her clients based on, this guy is good, this woman is going to take it all the way.
But the story is also very timely right now with everything that's going on.
That's true, right? You know? So, okay, so how do people know? I mean, so we're hinting at this and everything. So this player goes and he comes in and what? Does he feel like an outcast in the beginning? Because I know you come to a new school, man. That's the worst thing. I went through it several times in junior high and in high school, and it's hard, right?
Yeah, I think that that's very much, you know, what we think is going on with the kid at the beginning, you know, just trying to find his way.
Right.
And he's also, like, a lot smaller than the other guys and kind of skinny, so it's, you know, a big question of whether he'll be able to fit in and make the team. But then, should I go ahead and...
Is he transgender?
If you want to, this is your movie.
Well, I'll get to that question in a second. I think a big turning point is when... the boy's father picks him up, and in the car, something is revealed that, you know, the father thought he was dropping his daughter off for the girls' team tryouts. So at that point, you know, the audience knows that it's a girl, but the rest of the team and the coach don't know. So we then are watching to figure out, like, is this...
That's a good idea to give the twist, because then you're dealing with the consequences of that twist of revealing it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You're a filmmaker, aren't you?
No, I'm not, but I'm an interviewer. I learn as I go along. You gotta adapt, you know. No, but this is really cool. So so this takes turns in everything here. Let's get a little bit to the cast, okay? Casting the film, did you both do it? Or did you get somebody else to do it? How did it work?
We have a casting director.
But
I'll let Jeannie tell the story. It's a pretty damn good story, I think.
Okay.
Well,
so tell it, Jeannie.
So Joey hired this casting director duo, a mother and daughter, Lisa Pantone and Gigi Barrett, and they were fantastic. And, it's a really tough lead role to cast. It's, someone who's young enough to be in high school needs to look, a woman, but look enough like a guy to pass.
Right.
Be a good actor and also play basketball extremely well.
So you're looking for a unicorn.
Yes. And it was honestly extremely stressful until we found her because, you know, the whole movie pretty much hangs on whether we have somebody credible for that role. So the casting directors brought in a bunch of really great candidates for it. Some people had played in WNBA or professionally overseas. But we were still searching, and then one day the casting director was shopping in a clothing store, and she saw this woman who was, like, tall and lean and muscular and kind of had that look, and the casting director went up to her, and she asked if she'd played basketball, and the woman said yes, and she had played for 4 years at Nevada.
Yeah.
UNLV?
Or UNR.
Or Reno.
University of Nevada, yeah. And she asked her if she'd ever acted before, and the answer was no, but she was willing to come in and audition. So she came in and she was the best.
How many times does it happen to somebody in their lives they get discovered? So she was probably like meant for this role. This was written for her.
She thought
right?
She was going to Target that day to buy a new shirt, and then she came home with a new career.
Everybody's
I love that.
It was Urban Outfitters.
Right?
It was Urban. But
that's where you go to get new careers and new lives
in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You see, and you never know. I'm sure in a million years she probably thought she'd never be thought of as a movie star or anything like that, you know? And wow, this is very cool. So, you see, sometimes you don't know where it's going to come from. You know, they could have had an audition and still she would never have known of it.
We cast away. It was a wide net. I mean, we were talking to, you know, the casting director was looking at every college across the United States. You know, and high schools too. I mean, it was like Jeannie said. That's a unicorn. You know, actually, you said that. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But
Jeannie agreed.
Jeannie thought so. She thought it. I said it.
Well, so the film is Game, folks, and we're joined by Jeannie Donahoe and Joey Horvitz, who is the producer. Jeannie is so you wrote and directed the film and everything. Do you feel like a director? I mean, sometimes to me it seems like the director is like the painter of the picture, right? And everybody else is like what helps you paint the picture. But essentially, the director is the main artist of the project, wouldn't you say?
Well,
in a film?
I think, another analogy is the conductor of the orchestra.
Right,
so, like, you're working with a lot of exceptionally talented artists and people who are contributing whatever their role is, and then you're unifying that so that it's through one vision.
Right. But isn't it the director's vision, really?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So that's what I mean. You know, just like the painting is the painter's vision, you know. So you get to paint a picture, and a moving picture, obviously. Now, the coach seems like a very... You needed a very strong character for the coach.
Yeah.
He's a very tough guy.
We got one. Yeah.
How did that come about?
Do you want to describe this, or should I?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, you know, even in the writing stage, I was really... I had this, like, long-shot dream of trying to cast an NBA player because... Or a retired player because I thought it would, you know, bring an authenticity to a role
That's
like that
true,
and
right?
a, you know, a strength, but also shine a light on this message of the film that we're, you know, putting out there in the world. So, you know, you never know if that's going to happen or not, but Joey and the casting directors and the whole team worked really hard to get this material to Rick Fox, who's basically like the top example of someone who played, retired, and transitioned into acting. And he's an amazing guy. He was incredible to work with, and he really responded to the material and jumped on board. So I grew up in Boston and was like a Celtics fan my whole life, so I've followed his career for a long time. And then he played for the Lakers and won championships and then started acting, and he's actually in my favorite basketball movie, Spike Lee's He Got Game. So it was like an absolute dream situation to work with him.
Yeah, wow, amazing. He's very tall, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you know how tall he is?
Oh, he's over, he's maybe 6'4", I don't know.
He's got to be like 6'5". You probably look at
really?
Him.
Really?
Yeah, he's super tall. He's probably as tall
so,
as my dad.
Now, so did he have any acting background?
Yeah, so he's been in a bunch of movies and series, TV shows.
Cool, so he was an actor also, not just a player. Wow, very cool. So the movie is Game. Do you have a website for the movie?
Well, it's what
Social
Joey mentioned
media,
about.
Maybe?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page.
Okay.
It's called Game Basketball Short Film.
Okay.
Kind of long.
But that's
the name is longer than the movie.
I know.
Well, that's because Facebook doesn't really give you handles.
No, the game was already taken.
Exactly.
I'm sure the game short, the game basketball. I mean, you got to get creative.
That's true, yeah. So now, Rachel asked you about transgender.
Oh, yeah. So
okay. Now, before you say it, I don't think it is. I don't think the character is transgender. I think it's about something else. But go ahead. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I wrote the story thinking of AJ's character as a girl who doesn't feel like she can do what she wants to do as a girl. And so she puts on this disguise of being a boy. So it, to me, that's where the origin of the story came from. But in sharing the movie, I mean, once you make the movie, you let it go into the world, and people, you know, they understand it and they make sense and connection to the material in their own unique ways. And a lot of people watching it have thought it is a transgender story, which doesn't, you know.
It's not, because it's not that she wants to abandon her gender. She just realizes that in order to do what she wants to do, she might have
she
to,
has
pl-
to look
play
like
a certain
a male.
Role.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking.
True in a lot of.
So that's essentially why she did this. She wanted to play basketball, but she wanted to play people to take her seriously.
Yeah, and this is a school in the story that is, you know, championship level, elite boys team. You know, and I think there's an assumption, though it's more implied than anything, that maybe the girls' team is not taken as seriously or as well funded or as competitive in that school in particular.
Yeah.
Which was the case in my high school quite a bit. I mean, the boys' teams were always way, way more...
I would get called up to play on the guys' team.
Oh, yeah? In basketball?
Because I went to really small private schools. And so, I mean, we were nowhere near as good as any of the public schools. But I was the best of the girls' team and pretty much better than a lot of the guys. So yeah, my coach knew that. Like he would bring, because I played pretty much my whole life, my whole childhood.
Cool.
And I was pretty dang good. I'm trying to join a comic league out here.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But the movie really can speak to you a lot, Rachel, because you're a feminist. You're
I mean, it's not. I hate that word. Is that as a feminist?
No, I'm sorry. Did
you? I mean, I'm very pro women.
Somebody said they were. Maybe it was Tori that said that. You don't call yourself.
I mean, I just I identify as being very pro women, but I don't like to put. I don't like labels or putting myself in boxes because then that people form assumptions. But
stand corrected.
But women's basketball in general has never got, or women's sports, but particularly women's basketball has never gotten the respect or attention that it deserves, I think. But yeah, I mean, that's a cool story. I also know what that's like as a woman who played basketball and just being a player too. Yeah. So
they probably don't invest as much in the women's teams, right, as in the boys' teams in school.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are laws about public teams in public schools, for example, like Title IX, where technically things have to be equally funded if there is a girls' team and a boys' team. But there are so many exceptions to that, and boosters in high schools that raise independent private funding for the boys' teams. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, the boys tend to get better slots for the game time. They have the pep rally. They have, better uniform. It's just there's a fanfare about boys' sports that's really different from women's. And as I was researching this, I also learned that a lot of women in the WNBA have day jobs, and then they go and play mm-hmm. basketball, quote unquote, professionally. But
where their male counterparts literally never have to work a day in their life
play basketball.
Yeah. So the inequality is staggering.
Yeah. Well, I really like this story. I think it's really cool. I also. I can identify with it even outside of basketball because for a year I went to Catholic school in Vegas. But I found the football team made an announcement, and I went to a school where they're known for their football, and they said they would let girls try out. I don't know why. So I went to the team meeting. Here I am at 15 showing up just because I could throw a football. I was really good. I could play I played power puff or whatever. And I could catch, but I was like, there's no way. My mom's Jewish. She's not going to ever let me, one, play for a Catholic football team, two, with the boys. I need to just sit this one out, it's true. Jewish mothers don't let their kids play basketball or football.
Really?
I mean, I don't know if it's a fact, but name me 10 great Jewish football players, professional. Name 10.
I don't know. Well, you know what? In general, let me tell you something. In general, Jewish people are not strong in sports. They're strong in other things, more like
there are I disagree. I think there are people who are good at Jewish who are good at sports, but
I don't think there's one.
I know there's one, but name me five.
Yeah, that's give what me I'm saying. Three. They're only in Israel.
Give me three.
You know? Yeah,
in football?
No, in sports in general.
No, there's good. There's players that are
and baseball.
Mm-hmm,
but
baseball.
All I'm saying is, look, Israel never wins anything in the Olympics because, it's like we're not that strong in sports. Face it. But in soccer,
which is
and
weird
basketball,
because we're really strong militarily. Israel's really strong militarily, which to me means you're smart and athletic.
Well, I don't know. But the thing is, let me take it back, because soccer and basketball. The Israelis have been very strong for many years.
Yeah, I was going to say, Israel had
really
a strong
it,
basketball so. Team.
Yeah, well, anyway.
In the Olympics.
Anyway, back to game, folks. We're talking to Jeannie and Joey. So I wanted to ask you about this, the team. Was that already a team that had been together before, or did you have to put together a team for the film?
No, they hadn't been together before. Lisa and Gigi, our casting directors, with the help of a background casting entity, brought together a bunch of boys to try out. And so we had, it's background performance, so they're not named characters with dialogue, but it's such a specialty. They all had to be really good at basketball and have the right, look and age and everything. So we held auditions on a basketball court and watched them play.
Wow. Very cool. You see, so it's a really, you get involved in this. It's something else, right? And then it comes out, it's like a baby, right?
Yeah.
How long did it take from beginning to end, Joey?
We did about, I would say, 3 weeks in development on the script. We had about a 2 week prep. We had about a week shoot, and then about 6 to 7 weeks in post production.
So it didn't take like years or anything.
What I think is also important to note on this particular film is that all the department heads were basically all women. So we're talking about female DP, female editor, production designer, line producer. I was basically the only guy and the composer. But, you know, for the most part,
yeah. So it's a woman.
Girl power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very cool. Well, you come across as a strong woman who knows what she wants and wants to express herself.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, right? It takes a lot of like initiative and courage and stuff to come up and put something like this together. You know, I mean, I don't care if it's 15 minutes or an hour. It's still a lot of work.
Yeah,
right?
It's a lot of work.
Right. And I think about it, and sometimes, you know, I think about making a film, and it seems like something insurmountable. You know, you look at movies like Star Wars or something, the huge movies, and you go, how do they do this? But essentially, it's like a business.
It's called budget.
But you break down the duties among different people. So everybody takes care of, like, this department, that department. Like
it's like anything else.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Obviously, you don't have to do it all yourself. But you did a lot of it yourself, right? Because it was your vision, right?
Well, in terms of, you know, the shape of the story, yes. But it was a huge cast and crew that all did it together. Like, right. There were, you know, 100 people on set, I'd say. Probably 150 people total worked on it.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
But Jeannie is, you know, she's relentless.
Yeah?
This one, yeah. So, like, besides the making of the film and the post-production, I mean, she's flown all over the world supporting the film festival campaigns. She's really been there for this film and really supported it. I mean, how many festivals did we get into now?
Almost 70.
Mm. 70 festivals.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
congratulations.
You guys are not sitting on your laurels. You're actually doing what you have to do.
Yeah.
And very interesting. The movie is Game. Tell people then how they can find out more about the film. You said on Facebook, right?
Yeah, Facebook, Game Basketball Short Film. And okay. We're also on Instagram, same, Game Basketball Short Film. And then Twitter, Game Short Film.
Okay, so, and you guys are the ones running it and stuff?
I mean, people
can get directly to you, right?
And we have a Gmail account if anyone wants to get in touch. I could send a private link. It's gamebasketballshortfilm@gmail.com.
Okay, sounds good. Rachel, any more questions about the film? Because now I really want to see it. And they sent us a link, actually. I'm going to get to see it. And I'm going to. Because now, you know, after you talk about it and about how you do everything and this, you really want to see what the, mm-hmm. you know, what are we talking about here, you know? So this is
I saw
cool,
the trailer. Immediately noticed Rick Fox.
Yeah, right?
That's cool.
And what's next for you guys? What are you going to do? You're going to still focus on this until it gets an Oscar. And then after that, what are you going to do? Do you have any other films in the works?
Yeah, I mean, we're still bringing this to festivals. And you know, the Academy campaign is something right now. But I really want to make a feature-length film that's related to this as my first feature.
Oh, so it's going to be in a similar genre, let's say.
Another sports movie.
Sounds good. Well, guys, Jeannie, Joey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you both for having us.
Of course, you guys are amazing. We really congratulate you on something.
I hope
like
you guys win an Oscar.
Yeah, and you will. I know you will, man. Just believe in us. You know, you're in good company, you know? And
neither of us have won Oscars, but
yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. But as I said before,
I know someone named Oscar.
All right.
So that
Oscar Mayer?
An Oscar.
Okay. Oscar from Sesame Street. Did you ever like him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? He was cool, great. Right? In the garbage can.
Kind of, yeah. That's why I liked him.
We thought we'd make it silly in the end, folks. Thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you so much.
Of course, you're amazing. Much more success to you. I really hope this movie is going to touch a lot of people. And it's very timely, I think. Very And not just about, it's also about the relationship with people. It's not about basketball so much as it's about fitting in, right? And
yeah.
That's really, I think, every kid's, every teenager's biggest dilemma is, how do I fit in? And especially in a new school, you know? Wow. All right. Rachel, thank you.
Thank you.
We thank Catherine also for putting this all together. And I'm telling you, she always sends winners, so you guys can go home and rest assured you're winning. And don't forget us minions when you do.
I won't forget you, Sam.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you here on Monday, an hour actually earlier. An hour earlier it'll be. So it'll be like we're getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. All right, everybody. Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.